Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1. With Opel and the all-new Opel Astra. German engineering at its core. It's our most efficient Astra yet.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
I'm joined now from our Dáil studio by the Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee. Minister, good morning and thank
good
you
morning.
For being with us this morning. Can I ask you first of all for your response to Nuala O'Loan's interview at the start of the programme there, where she says the refusal of the British government and the Secretary of State to have a public inquiry into the murder of Pat Finucane is a betrayal of the Finucane family. Is she right?
Well, I suppose I can give my own personal opinion and say that I would agree with her, but that's not just my own view, it's the view of the government in that we think it should go ahead. We think this type of investigation should happen. I think it's wrong that the British government have decided not to or have said that they're not going to. And this is something that we will pursue. And I think the Taoiseach has clearly indicated that this is something that he will continue to pursue. So, yes, I think the wrong decision has been made here and we will try and rectify that.
I want to talk to you now about vaccines because we've all been talking about the COVID-19 vaccine this week. And on the programme yesterday, Professor Kingston Mills said that it would be reasonable in his view to ask people to take a vaccine before doing certain optional things. So he was mainly talking about travel, but also things like going to a sporting event, a pub, a gig. What's your view on that?
Well, look, there's a number of things that are happening with the vaccine and before it's rolled out. And we have a vaccine task force that has been established. It's been led by the Department of Taoiseach. You have everybody from our Minister for Health, Finance, Business, Education, all part of this. And they will bring a recommendation and a report to Cabinet next week. There are other elements then, I suppose, separate to the rollout and who gets it and the timeframe and everything else. But, you know, you've just mentioned whether it's travel, whether it's European-wide or international, and their conversations that we're having with their European colleagues as well, and that we need to discuss further. So I think everything needs to be left on the table for now, but really our focus in the first and foremost is to make sure that we get the vaccine, that we have a very clear plan in place, that we're able to roll it out as quickly as possible, but also, and the Taoiseach made reference to this yesterday, that the people who are most vulnerable are the ones who get it first. I sat in a meeting for almost 5 hours last week where we saw a lot of the facts, a lot of the figures, a lot of the data over the last few months, and what's very clear is that even though there have been some changes in trends in terms of people who are now getting the virus, the people who are unfortunately passing away and impacted most by it are our elderly. They're people who are with underlying conditions. So we need to make sure that first and foremost, they are the people who get this vaccine. And really, that needs to be our priority. But, you know, all of these other questions, you know, once you get the vaccine, should you have, you know, there's talk of some sort of a card to show that you've had it. They're questions, I think, that we need to look at, and we just don't have answers for them yet.
Because you'd very easily be crossing over the line into mandatory vaccination.
Exactly. So I think we need to be very careful that, you know, somebody is precluded from doing something because they haven't gotten it, because, you know, there may be a reason why they can't. You know, we have to look at all of these. So I think the first and foremost, it needs to be how do we get this rolled out? How do we make sure we can do it as quickly as possible? How do we make sure those who need it the most get it first? And then all of these other issues. You know, I think the travel issue is something maybe more so on a European level we need to discuss with colleagues. This is something the airlines are already talking about. But that is not our primary focus. It needs to be getting the vaccine out and making sure that all of what's happened in the last year, that we can start to see an end to this, and hopefully the vaccine will help us do that.
I was just struck by what you said there a moment ago about sitting through 5 hours of facts and figures and data and still seeing where the virus is hitting hardest. Does that leave you concerned now as we open up with the car parks full, people booking restaurants and pub meals for the weekend? I mean, is it the right thing?
Look, I mean, there's no doubt, and I travelled up to Dublin this morning myself, you know, traffic is busy, the roads have been busy irrespective of the fact that we've been in level 5 for the last few weeks, but I do think people are being careful. I do think whether it's our restaurants, whether it's the shops, you know, they're putting a huge amount of effort in place to make sure that people feel safe, that they are safe, that there isn't huge congregations of people, and that we limit any type of spread. We do know, however, that as you open up society, and we've seen it over the summer, that this virus will begin to spread again. What we need to try and do is make sure that we limit that spread. It's been a very difficult year. It's been a very long year for people. It's been a very tough few weeks in the last few weeks gone by. And I think we wanted to be able to allow people really more so to see family, to engage with family over the Christmas weeks, not to go mad, not to be out having Christmas parties, not to be out socialising every night of the week, but just to be able to meet up and to engage with people You know, there are some people who haven't seen, you know, more than a few others or a handful in months. Yeah, and I think it's more for people's mental health, because when I mentioned the figures and the facts and the data, the facts and the data also show that people, their mental health, the impact that this is having, it's huge. So you have to balance the two, but also the economy as well. So we're playing a balancing act here, and there's no point in saying we're not, but we have to do so carefully. And this is why personal responsibility is a massive part of this.
I was just wondering, though, if we see a spike in 10 days' time, will there be, you know, is government looking at contingency plans to maybe pull back on relieving restrictions around Christmas? If we're in a bad place in 10 days' time, will action be taken, or is the plan now?
So, I mean, we don't have a plan in that, you know, we'll meet every 10 days or so. But I think clearly if things start to change and dramatically decrease in and go in a direction we don't want them to, then we will be there and we will be ready to engage and come together as a cabinet with all of the experts and those who have advised us and worked with us. We know we're starting from a different base. So when you look at how we started to open up the country over the summer, we were starting at a very low base with very low numbers. We are in a slightly different space here. So while we have set dates, you know, where things will open up a little bit more on the 18th, that will go until the 6th of January. If we need to change those, of course, we will do that. But, you know, what we're asking people is, yes, you're able to maybe visit more people, you're able to be out and about a bit more, but that doesn't change the fact that you should still be wearing a face covering where you need to be, you should still be keeping your distance, you should still be washing your hands. And if people can adhere to that, I do think we can get through Christmas and you know, enjoy it somewhat. And
just,
really,
just
that's
to be clear,
what this
are you,
is about.
Are you saying that the 18th of December, it being the date when we can visit family and other houses, that might change if case numbers rise to a large extent?
I'm not saying that. I'm saying anything can change. I'm saying if, you know, if in the next week we were to see numbers just shoot out of control, then absolutely that's something that we have to address and take on board. So I don't think anything is set in stone. And even though, you know, we have set ourselves different levels, we have set ourselves different time limits over the last 6 months, they have varied, they have changed, we have had to make amendments. And I'm saying that's always an option. But obviously, we have set the time frames. We would like to be able to stick to it. And the way that we can do that is by obviously everybody adhering to the rules that have been set out.
Have you any plans to deal with the anti-vaccine element that's here? It's in every country, of course, but it has the potential to get quite nasty now as this vaccination programme is rolled out.
Do you know, when I mentioned the task force earlier, I mentioned that the Department of Education is part of this, and obviously health. And I think there's a huge body of work that needs to be done in talking to people and communicating with people about the vaccine, what it is, what it does, why we're rolling it out. And I think often concerns and fears that arise, it's due to a lack of understanding maybe, or a lack of clarity as to what it is that's actually happening. So, you know, this is a vaccine that has been approved. It has gone through the standard trials. Yes, it's possibly been done maybe quicker than some other types of vaccines that we've seen in the past, but we are obviously in such a crucial and a critical situation. We needed it to be done quickly, but it has passed through all of the relevant channels, it has been approved, and I think it's about engaging with people and educating. So as part of the rollout, there's going to be a huge education focus, you know, in linking in with people, be it on social media, be it on the various different platforms, so that we can talk to people, but also that our doctors and that those who are going to be rolling it out, that they speak to people and that obviously they hear from the experts, not just from us politicians.
You're launching this white collar crime plan today. James Hamilton was on Morning Ireland this morning. He wrote the report for you, and he said, look, I can't promise anything here. It's over to the minister. And he mentioned that you were coming on today. So what is the priority with this plan for you?
Well, firstly, if I could just thank James and all of those who've worked on it. They've done a huge body of work. And this was, from a justice point of view, the main recommendation or ask of us from a piece of work that was done back in 2017. I mean, my intention here, this is a massive plan. You have over 25 recommendations to tackle white-collar crime, fraud, economic crime. And what I intend to do now, because this is not just a justice, you have finance, you have business and innovation, you have public expenditure and reform. So all of these departments, we have come together and we've already started working on an implementation plan. And for me, what matters about an implementation plan is that it has a timeline, that it has clear targets, that you know exactly who's implementing each target, and that you have a continuous checking on what you're doing. So, I mean, the report itself, I suppose, what it recommends, you could put it into three broad categories. So it recommends structural change. So we have a recommendation to have a review group. So this is somebody that would advise government. They would pick up on different trends that are emerging. They would work on a continuous basis on an annual plan then as well. So we would have a multi-annual strategy to combat economic crime and corruption accompanying the action plan. You also have a proposal where we have so many different agencies. So you have the DPP, you have Angarda Síochána, you have the Central Bank, you have SIPO, you have Revenue, and you have many others. And while James is suggesting that they are all working very well, what he's suggesting is that even though there is informal engagement, it needs to be put in a more formal structure and a more formal setting. So they are very key structural reforms that have been recommended and that I intend to move on and that we intend to work on. He also talks about resourcing. Again, I think he highlights that a lot of these agencies are well resourced, but he very specifically points out that the Garda National Economic Crime Bureau hasn't been as well resourced as it should have been in the past, and that's something that we are actively moving to rectify. And then the third area, if I could, just in terms of the broad categorisation of all of these, is legislative change. So it's everything from change that's required in my colleague Minister McGrath's office in public expenditure and reform. It's legislative change for the Gardaí, where we're already making progress on. It's legislative reform within the Taoiseach's department and others. So there's a huge body of work here, but maybe to bring it back for people in terms of, well, how does this impact on me? If you think of Ireland, and I'm very struck by the first few words that James Hamilton says in the report, we're a small country, we have 5 million people, but we have the fifth largest financial services sector in Europe. We have over 100,000 people working in this space and with insurance and others. We're moving into a digital era. Everybody does everything online. The potential for fraud, for you to be,
scammed,
it's massive. And really what we're trying to do is plug the gaps that exist in the law to make sure that our standards are upheld and that people's money, that their livelihoods, that that they are protected as well, and that the Gardaí and others have the resources to do that.
Okay, I want to ask you about the recent decision by the Court of Appeal, which has changed considerably how we in the media can report on child murders. And we on this programme talked to a victim of child rape this week, an adult victim of child rape, and she said it was just disappointing and degrading to have to be called a victim and not have her name used when that's what she herself wanted. What are you planning to do about that?
So I'm planning to change and to respond to the recent Court of Appeal on this particular section 252 of the Children's Act. I listened to your interview and I listened to the woman, I suppose, the victim that you've mentioned, and I mean, she was extremely brave to come on and to speak in the way that she did, and I think what struck me most is that it's not that she necessarily wants to put her name out there, but the choice has been taken away from her.
Yeah.
And this doesn't just apply to rape victims where they have been children or where this has happened with their children. We have seen other cases, and I have had people come to me since this ruling where, you know, children have been murdered, where a parent wants to continue a legacy, where they want to be able to name their children and remember them. Yeah,
mother of murdered children on the programme as well. We couldn't name them either. And she said she felt gagged by the current situation. So how quickly can it change?
So I'm working to do it as quickly as possible. There was a slight issue initially because this was the Children's Act. It was enacted when children was part of the Department of Justice. They've obviously separated into two departments. So we needed to make sure that we knew where this was being dealt with. It is in the Department of Justice, so I'm actively working with my officials to try and bring this forward as quickly as possible, whatever format we need to do it. So whether it's working with opposition and government colleagues, whether it's a single piece of legislation, but it is being worked on at the moment. I know there's potentially other appeals and different things that are being looked at the moment. That doesn't matter to me. I want to change this because I think we have seen in such a short space of time the amount of people that this is having a negative impact on really is huge, and I want to give back that option to those people who want to be able to say who they are, to encourage other people to come forward, or again to remember their children and to create some sort of legacy for them.
Because while it is perhaps the intention is to protect the victim, it is, we have seen up to now, it is sometimes the perpetrator who is using this to continue to conceal their identity.
Absolutely. And the problem is the court have obviously said that a child's identity can't be published, but also this prohibition would apply to the identity of the person who killed the child if that would indirectly lead to the child's identity. So in an inadvertent way, it is protecting the you know, the person that we don't want to protect here. So it is an interpretation, unfortunately, that the Court of Appeal have taken on this particular act.
Okay, but
they have suggested it needs to change, and I am working on that and hope to have it done as quickly as possible.
Okay, I want to talk to you about the appointment of Seamus Wolfe to the Supreme Court and the questions that you answered and the answers that you gave in the Dáil last week. And one of the most striking things you said was that Leo Varadkar said to you that Seamus Wolfe would make a good judge. Was he leaning on you to appoint him?
No, he wasn't. And I said that because, you know, that's a conversation that we had, and he said that himself. And I don't think it's unusual that somebody who was Taoiseach and worked with an AG for that length of time and worked closely with them, that they would have a particular view. But I mean, I took that view on board, but I also looked at, you know, the overall names that were there. I went through a particular process, as I have done for five other appointments since then. I made my own decision. I made recommendations. But, you know, none of the names that I have ever brought to Cabinet have ever gone to Cabinet without engagement or approval from four other different individuals. So, I mean, there are a number of people involved in this process, and at every recommendation or every nomination, and there have been six new appointments since I was made Minister for Justice back in June, at every stage we have gone through that particular process.
So the leaders of all the parties knew that you were going to recommend the appointment of Seamus Wolfe?
They did, and you know, I said very clearly last week, and they have said themselves as well, that they agreed and that they supported that recommendation. And I suppose every government has a different way of doing things. There's a clear structure, but obviously there isn't a set way in which people need to engage. But, you know, every government has a way of doing it. What I'm saying is that I have never brought a name to Cabinet without engaging with the Taoiseach, the Taoiseach, Minister Ryan, the Attorney General, and ensuring that there was a consensus before that name was brought to Cabinet. There are, of course, changes that need to be made, I think. You know, I'm not saying that it's a perfect system, and I intend to bring new legislation and the heads of bills before Cabinet before Christmas, so in the next 2 weeks. So, I mean, this has been something, obviously, that has been ongoing for some time.
So Shane Ross was right all along.
Well, no, I mean, I'm bringing forward the heads of bills, and it's not exactly what Shane Ross had been proposing, but I have taken the time over the last 4.5 months to look at the legislation that was being proposed, what the current structure is, how we can improve it, taking advice, obviously, from the likes of Greco and others. Mm-hmm. And on that basis, I'll be bringing forward recommendations in the next 2 weeks.
Sure,
the system is what it is now, but I do think it needs to be improved.
But I'm sure you followed the commentary after you answered those questions, and what you did has been characterised as you going on off and having a good think about who should be a Supreme Court judge by yourself and coming up with Seamus Wolfe as the answer. Is that what happened?
Well, I mean, it is my role as Minister for Justice to make these recommendations, but irrespective of I suppose this one or any other appointment that has been made, I have always engaged, and where there have been questions, where there has been a requirement for further engagement with colleagues, that has always happened. So I don't just decide I'm doing this on my own, I'm making a recommendation. There is a process that I have put in place and that I engage with my colleagues, and the fact that we're in a three-party government, it means that I engage with all three party leaders, but also the Attorney General, whose advice I take on board and who I value very much. So I mean, it is my
the
job
new
as
Attorney
Minister
General.
For Justice. The new Attorney General, yes. But it is my job to make these recommendations, and I have to, of course, apply a process, and I do so, and I take this very seriously. I mean, we're talking about a Supreme Court judge, but also whether it's a district court judge.
I think that's why
judge,
people were surprised that it happened in the way that it did, because it was a Supreme Court appointment. I mean, if you look at this baldly, if you're appointed to a job and in the first weeks your boss says to you, this fellow would be good in that job, That to me is an instruction.
No, it's not. And I didn't take it as an instruction. In fact, I outlined very clearly last week that it was made aware to me when I first came in the first day or two that this was a vacancy and that there was an urgency to fill it. Even with that, I took a number of weeks before I brought it to Cabinet. I think there were two or three Cabinet meetings before I brought it to Cabinet. So to suggest that somebody said something to me and that I automatically went about and did it is simply not the case. Mm-hmm. I took
it was just
the time,
interesting that you said it in the Dáil, though. You know, did Leo Varadkar know you were going to say that when you brought it up?
I haven't spoken to him about this. I haven't, you know, we haven't sat down and talked about it in detail. I said what was the case, and that was simply the case. And I don't think there's anything wrong with somebody who has worked with another person very closely for a number of years expressing a view. I think we would all probably do that. But I was very clear there was no instruction there. But also I was very clear that there was no concern, there was no issue from the Taoiseach, from Minister Ryan and others when I engaged with them and made my recommendation. There have been other instances where I have made recommendations, where there has been further discussion, where there has been debate, you know, where there has been to-ing and fro-ing, and that is the way that the process works. As I've said, it's you could say it's not an ideal process, but, you know, it is a decision that has to be taken. I would also stress, and I think I have to stress this, the person who was appointed came through a process that was chaired by the Chief Justice, five presidents of the courts, by the Law Society, the Bar Council and other members, all of whom deemed him to be a suitable and to be a fit candidate for this job.
Yeah, but that's not a recommendation. That's not a recommendation. That's just saying, yes, this application can go through.
But the language that's used is that these are recommendations from the Judicial Appointments Advisory Board. But you have to then look at the overall names, and that is what I did. And a decision was taken, and I put, you know, I put Seamus Wolfe forward as that recommendation. It was approved by all of the persons I've just outlined and was also approved by Cabinet. So, you know, and I won't get into discussions at Cabinet.
Well, here's another take on it. Breed Smith on this programme last Friday in the gathering, the People Before Profit TD, suggested that you as a young and female minister were held back by other people in your party from doing what the guys do when they're challenged to answer questions in the Dáil. They would have been straight up there and answering the questions. Were you treated differently from your male colleagues?
I don't think I was, and I think we found ourselves in a very difficult and unusual situation whereby you had questions being asked and at the same time a potential impeachment process being potentially put before the Dáil. And irrespective of what people might say, the type of commentary, the type of questions that were raised not just in the Dáil but outside of the Dáil, where we had people specifically talking about sitting judges and their suitability to be there or not, was completely inappropriate. So there was, and there still is, because this issue of impeachment is something that hasn't gone away, there was a huge concern about me as Minister for Justice or anybody else talking about the suitability of actual sitting judges. And so there was a concern, that concern is still there. But I mean, I made myself very clear that I was very happy to answer questions, that I was very happy to engage with opposition parties on this, you know, and I made that offer and then obviously came into the Dáil later on. But I mean, any suggestion that I was treated differently, I don't accept that. I mean, I've done my job and I think I've always done my job to the best of my ability.
Minister, thank you for joining us on the programme. That's Minister for Justice Helen McEntee.